Good evening and welcome to Peace Talk, a production for KTOO Radio's Focus on Community.
Once some guy went so far as they try to imagine no heaven, no hell, and no God. No king, no country, not even possessions. We all thought he was asking a lie. So we kept on fighting for all of this stuff. But it never turned out to be reason enough to justify losing people we love. Yeah, that's what we did before the end of war. The end of war.
Peace Talk is a monthly program produced by the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace. It's VFP's contribution to our community's ongoing conversation about war and peace and the important issues and questions they raise in our society and around the world. I'm Rich Moniak. Tonight on Peace Talk, we'll be exploring the film Hunting in Wartime. Produced and directed by independent filmmaker Samantha Farinella with Sonia Gray and Christy George, it's a documentary that examines the lives of several Vietnam veterans from Hoonah. Over the course of 14 years, 28 young men from the small Alaskan community were sent to Vietnam. 17 of them saw combat, and all but one returned home. Like others across the country, they weren't welcomed back like soldiers from prior wars, or from the recent wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. But unlike most, they had the opportunity to return to their roots and stay there. Hunting in Wartime traces the pieces of the story of some of these men. From their experience with racism before the war through to the present day, it's a powerful depiction of what it's like to carry the memories of combat for almost an entire adult lifetime. Many of you may have seen the screenings of the film last month in Hoonah, or at Juneau's Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater, where it was originally scheduled to be shown twice in one night. But after sellout crowds both times, theater manager Colette Costa decided to hold it over for more shows the following weekend. If you missed the film, you can watch a 3-minute trailer and read about it online at hoonahsheroes.com. I interviewed Farinella the day after the first screenings in Juneau. You'll be hearing that and some observations from two of the veterans who appeared in the film. Those were recorded by Farinella's crew during the talkback after each screening. And you can listen to reactions from members of the audience who attended the screenings in Hoonah, Juneau, and Anchorage. Before we get to those, here's an audio recording of the official trailer.
When I grew up, I wanted to be a hunter and a fisherman, and I could do both of them.
I don't think any of us said that we were going to be soldiers when we grew up.
Colonel, come over. How come you're so tough on the Indians? He said, I know these Indians. They're from my hometown. They're tough, and they could take it.
Most of the kids that were my age didn't speak Tlingit. They wanted them to speak only English.
About who you
were, what your Tlingit name was, not about Vietnam.
We used to admire these great big long jets with long wings, and it had a cloud going behind all of them. We didn't know it was engineers.
Dreams were bad.
We weren't made to kill. We weren't made to kill humans.
They're fishermen. They use nets like we use nets.
Well, going to Vietnam, they closed it down. So we lost the Hoonah fleet then.
Time that slips away, now we're lost.
My wife is tough. She slammed me up against the wall and said, you talk about it.
When I was was in Vietnam, I told myself, if I ever make it out of here, I'm going back home and I'm staying there until the day I die. We know that a big percentage of the guys took their own lives, and a lot of us climbed back out.
The music you heard accompanying the trailer is, of course, part of the film. It was composed by general residents Lyle Kelly James and Colleen Elizabeth James. And among the voices were Tony Mills, Fred Bennett, Victor Bean, Donald C., Warren Shakley, and George Lindoff, all veterans who served in a war that they and most Americans wanted to forget. Who you didn't hear in the trailer was Samantha Farinella. She directed it but offered no commentary or narration to the film itself. Farinella hails from New York City, where she founded One Angry Woman Productions. She has produced 6 documentaries and 4 short films. Born in 1971, she was barely beyond her toddler years when the Vietnam War ended. So how did she find herself in Hoona, telling a story about these veterans? Let's listen to her story. I'm in the K2 studio with Brooklyn filmmaker Samantha Farinella. And she produced and directed Hunting in Wartime, a documentary film about Vietnam War veterans from Hoona that she screened for judo audiences last night at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me, Samantha.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So you've produced and directed 6 documentaries and 4 narrative shorts. Your first feature documentary, Left Lane, won 8 awards, including honors in New Zealand, Paris, and New York. And your narrative short film, Somewhere Along the Way, was a finalist at the Sundance Directors Lab in 2000. Why don't you tell us a little bit about those projects?
God, the first project was so long ago. Yeah, the first project was a narrative, and it was, again, a historical piece about lesbians in the 1950s. And at that time, you know, it was so insular and there was problems. And it was just something that Erin Greenwell, who actually produced and edited Hunting in Wartime, we collaborated on. And I like to highlight stories that people don't necessarily know. So, again, that was a story that, you know, people didn't really know how that happened. So that was just a quick little short that we wanted to make into a feature, and it still might be made into a feature someday. But that was straight on, like, narrative. My next big feature, like the first feature documentary I did, was A Left Lane, and that was about spoken word artist Alex Olson, and she is kind of a spoken word artist who's like very political, kind of comedian, and she had like a 10,000 person fan base. I was a good friend of her, and I was her tour manager, so we just decided to like combine talents, and I made a film about her and the times. It was like during like the Iraq War, Bush administration stuff. I didn't think it was gonna. I just thought I would make it for her fan base. But I applied to the New York Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and it won the Audience Award. And then from there, it just blew up and was in over 40 festivals. And I was flown to New Zealand and Ireland and South Africa. It was great. It was wonderful. And, yeah, it won 8 awards. And then from there, I got a job at Nickelodeon Networks and worked there for 4 years. And I did, like, behind the scenes on TV shows and stuff. That's how I made my living. And in 2009, when the crash happened, I lost my job. And then 2 weeks after that, my mother was diagnosed with stage 3 lung cancer. So it was a really tough time for me, but I had time on my hands. I had severance. I wasn't working. I was helping my mom in New Jersey. And then so I just talked to my friend Sonia and her partner Danielle, and we had a conversation about, like, I said that I was hungry to do another documentary, but I didn't have an idea. And then they told me about this story. I had visited Hoona 2 years prior. I was there in 2008. And I met some of the veterans, you know, just to hang out, but I didn't know the story. So then they told me, like, the crazy per capita rate of them serving and the survival rate. And I thought that was interesting. I thought the racism aspect was interesting. I thought there was just several layers to this story that I thought would make a great story. And it's also something that's a piece of history in our country that no one really knows about. So I raised $16,000 on Kickstarter, and then I went up in the summer of 2010 and just started. I shot like, I don't know, 60 hours of footage or something. And then subsequently after each year, I would come up and shoot something. The first year I tried to edit, a piece together so I could apply to grants. And the grants, you know, they trickle in. So it was, you know, first I got an Alaska Humanities Forum grant. But all these grants were on the second or third try. So it just, it takes time, you know, it's building. And then I received a New York State Council on the Arts grant, and then I received a Rasmussen grant. And the, most recently, the last 40 days, I had an Indiegogo campaign and raised $6,000 to come up here and show it. So it's just, it's a piecemeal effort of getting this film, you know, out there. And I recently just had a meeting with KTOO, and they were telling me about the how you get things on air and how it works, you know, distribution-wise. And now I realize I need at least $10,000 to get it out there on the in broadcast. So,
and this would be to broadcast on 360 North statewide?
360 North statewide, no, it would actually, that would be to broadcast, they would help me broadcast it nationally.
PBS?
Yeah.
Wow, that would be
so
fantastic.
That would be really, really big. And that, yeah, that's where the, I think more money comes into just having to outreach and stuff, so.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's good to know, like, you know, I feel like I'm in the home stretch. You know, I raised close to $80,000. I've never taken a penny for myself for anything, so it's just, you know, it's a labor of love. But I would really love to get this seen to a wider audience because I think it deserves to.
Well, and you mentioned the racism element. That was a piece that was very pronounced in the beginning of the film last night. Was that something you anticipated being
as
prominent?
Yeah, I knew that, you know, I knew that their language was taken away. I knew that, you know, it was a really racist town at one time, you know. It was, you know, as Donald C. says, there were signs on Franklin Street on the bars, no dogs and no Indians allowed. I thought that juxtaposition of you know, being racist but still fighting for the United States was very interesting to me. Like, I wanted to know more about that, like why they had that pride to fight, you know. So that I just felt that was a powerful statement to the men, or a testament to the men, you know, of their bravery. But not just that, but I also think that what they had in common with the Vietnamese people, like, you know, a lot of them went there and they heard the word same, same, or, you know, why are you fighting this war when you look just like us? It's a small fishing community. Vietnam is a fishing community. You know, there's a lot in common they had with the Vietnamese people. So there were just so many layers to this I thought were very interesting and intriguing.
Well, and that's a layer that deals with trauma, that in a way introduces them to trauma before war trauma.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially the film discusses how, you know, in Tlingit culture, you bless something you kill, you speak to it, you tell them that you're going to use it, you know, and then going to war and having to kill for maybe not even knowing what particular reason. It's devastating, you know. It's a miracle that these guys came back from all the hardship that they had to endure.
Yeah. Now the webpage suggests that you had an earlier title for the film.
Yes.
Home is Heroes.
Yes.
And was that a serious contender, or is it just a placeholder? And how did it evolve into Hunting in Wartime?
It was a serious contender. I had that since the beginning. What I did was last year in 2014, I came back and wanted to show the veterans and their families in like a close community the film, just to see. I wanted elders to see it. I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing anything that was offensive. I wanted to make sure I was, you know, really sticking to Tlingit culture, and I didn't want to put something out there that wasn't as true as could be. So some of the feedback I got from about one veteran in particular and some of the family members did not like the title, Hoon is Heroes. They felt that title was, in Tlingit culture, there's not really a word like hero. You know, it wouldn't really, they don't look at themselves as heroes. So yeah, I went back home after August. I mean, that was the biggest complaint. Like, they loved the film, which was great. I had to do minor tweaks. But the title was the big one. And so I went back home and just started to think about it. And just some of the stories I remember in the film, like, several of the men said that the first time they had someone in their sights and they had to kill another human being, they thought of them as a deer and to get through it. And I think George Lindoff says, you know, I did that, but I knew I was lying to myself. And then coming back home, and Donald C. has a great story about, not a great story, a horrible story, about how he, you know, gets off the boat first time hunting and, like, kills two deer immediately, sees the blood and snaps and kills another, like, five deer. So I just thought that the conflict of hunting, what the subsistence hunting and what that means to them, how they're brought up hunting and fishing, and then having it skewed or tarnished in this way in war, and of course trying to get it back, you know, getting that, getting their provider role back in their culture. I thought that was a decent title. So we went back and forth on that title too a lot, but we wound up on that one. And I know some, I know there was a complaint about the title with a few people saying like, oh, I just want everyone to know this has nothing to do with killing Viet Cong in wartime. It's a metaphorical term. It means the stresses and how your whole society, how it's structured, you know, can get turned on its head, basically. But yeah, no offense to anyone. It was never supposed to be a title like that was about killing Viet Cong, because that's not what I wanted.
Yeah, well, the Hoonah's Heroes has almost a TV sound to Hogan's Heroes, you know.
Yeah.
I can imagine that would have not come off so well necessarily,
yeah,
either with a larger audience.
No, I like Hunting in Wartime. I think fits it,
yeah,
a lot.
The metaphor,
a lot better.
The metaphor is really seems appropriate, especially after seeing it. Yeah. So obviously the veterans had kept these stories close to themselves. What was their initial response when you spoke to them about telling their stories in a way that would be shared by film?
There's some qualities that, you know, like when you know in your life what you're not good at and what you're better at. And I know I'm good at people talking to me. I think I'm pretty honest. Like I don't try to BS anybody. You know what I mean? And I think I came up there and was completely honest about what I was doing. And I think that registered. I think that having some of the people in the community too vet me, you know, like Sonia Gray has been in Hoonah her whole life, you know, she's a producer on the film. And Ozzie Shakely, who is in several Native American, Native Alaskan veterans associations and is prominent in the Juneau community. You know, I think having people behind me to support me, Marlene Johnson was another one. So I think there were people in the community that vetted me in a way. And then I think combined with me wanting to tell the story as honestly as possible, I think that they opened up. I mean, I think it's always a little difficult in the beginning, but I think once most of the vets got going and speaking about it, it almost felt they wanted to get it off their chest. And I think in some ways it might be easier to tell a stranger than their family members about these things, because there wasn't that the element of judgment or the element of, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Well, not to bring a religious aspect into it, but it's almost the same as a Catholic confession.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting to me. Like, I don't have the answer, but I think maybe the combination of those things,
yeah,
it came at the right time. I really don't know, but I'm so thankful and so grateful that they did trust me, because, you know, I really want to do right by them. And seeing the reaction in Hoonah and Juneau now, it's overwhelming. I mean, it was such a wonderful, wonderful screening. So, you know, I had 4 screenings total so far. And it blew me away, you know. So
the path to reaction from the beginning is obviously not one step. There's a progression in there. And what kind of changes did you see in the veterans and in the community as your work moved forward?
You know, it's been great. I think that people in the past have come to Hoonah to tell different stories, and nothing happens to it. It's either somebody's dissertation or it doesn't, you know. And I think me coming every, you know, for the past 6-7 years, I think has really not entrenched me, but they know me now. Like, you know, I come into town and people recognize me. I think that's good because it's more of a trust. In terms of what's going on in the community, I've seen a lot of wonderful changes. Some of these men had falling outs, weren't speaking to each other for various reasons. Some kept to themselves more. Victor Bean in general, he's one of the main people in the film, and he kind of keeps to himself. You know, he had a really hard time, a lot of drug and alcohol addiction. He's sober now, but people don't see him much, you know, outside. And after this film, you know, he reached out to other veterans and people that maybe they were enemies or whatever. Now they're all kind of talking, and that's the most important thing. Like, veterans who weren't talking before are talking now to each other. So that, you know, I feel like that's kind of worth me making the film, is that there's a healing going on in the community that is palpable. You can actually feel it. And I think just talking about the war, talking about Vietnam, I think they were afraid too. They, you know, it's such a stigmatized war, and I think they felt tremendous amounts of guilt and conflict and remorse. And I think to talk about it with their families and their friends and their community is so, so important. And, you know, if we can continue that to keep going, that's worth making the film. Like, seriously, it's wonderful, you know.
And how did it affect you personally in terms of expectations when you began and where you wound up? And your own awareness of war and trauma from war, I mean, how did you grow through this process?
Oh, it's I really grew. I mean, these guys are my friends. Like, I want only the best for them. It's, you know, it's really intense. It's intense to hear these stories. And it's, you know, I'm a crier. I'm very, like, emotional. So, but the human cost of war is so great. And I think that politicians like to wave the flag and not really help veterans when they come home. I think there are so many elements that really make me angry, especially with Vietnam. Like, these guys weren't helped at all in terms of mental health. So for me, it's just, I really, really, really wanted to portray the human cost of war.
Yeah, the human cost
yeah.
can only be told through the human side, the human story, rather than through the, you know, the classical ways we learned, which
yeah.
is through the generals and the politicians
the
and
leaders,
the dates and battles. And
I don't think I've seen that in a documentary. I think there's so much glorification of war. I mean, even myself, I was a tomboy. Like, I played with G.I. Joe dolls. I wanted to be a Green Beret. Like, it is entrenched in our culture, and I think it's very dangerous. Royal Hill always says that, you know, war should be the very, very last resort and be swift. And I, you know, and it's true. I think that we seem to want to go to war for everything, and it's a moneymaker, it's a generator of money. And I think that needs to change in society. But like I said, this film is completely about their journey. And seeing that journey, I hope reveals, you know, what the human cost of war is. And, you know, like, I'm applying to a bunch of festivals, and I haven't gotten in a lot of them. And I think it's, you know, when I talk to the people putting on the programs, they're like, yeah, people really want to see more things about Iraq and Afghanistan because it's more current. And I feel like they're missing out because we are looking at veterans 40 years down the road. So it gives us a glimpse of what's going to happen to the veterans in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think it's important for people to see what war does to someone. I don't care what war it is. It's the same. And I think, you know, a lot of Iraqi veterans have seen my film, and they say the same thing. It's totally relatable, and it speaks to them as much as it does a Vietnam War vet.
Well, certainly one of the elements of post-traumatic stress is the word post, which could be forever.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as an artist, you have to get immersed in your work while you're producing it. And you have a long project like this, and you have no idea what the outcome is going to be, how it's going to be received. What kind of anxiety do you feel, or do you feel it? I mean, are you so immersed that you're drawn in that direction by some power that just keeps you going without worrying that maybe it'll flop?
It's a great question. I grew up in lower middle class, so I don't have, you know, most filmmakers in general are independently wealthy. It's something that I learned a little bit too late in the game, but no, that's not true. I love filmmaking. And I, you know, I definitely kind of centered myself into documentary. In documentary, you really have to go in. I'm a very rigid person in general. I'm very, like, kind of OCD. But I realized with documentary, you have to go in and let go. Like, you know, you have an idea, you have a set of questions, like a skeleton of questions, and you go into a room with someone. And that could take you in a totally different direction, and you have to be open to that. So I knew this was going to be a long process. I knew that my last film, I actually, you know, used some of my money and went into debt for Left Lane. And it was great. I'm glad I did it. But it was also like I said to myself, I can't use my own money. I don't have it. So I really relied on grants and crowdfunding sources. And, you know, I was patient. I would just make a piece, show it, try to get into a festival, get some money, hire the editor, and, like, go more. You know, that was just, like, the way it was, and it was okay for me. I knew I would finish it. One thing about me is I know I'm a closer. I will finish something. I'm not concerned with that. What I am concerned with is distribution. You know, I lucked out. Left Lane, my first film documentary, that won awards quickly, was, you know, went to festivals everywhere, got distribution. That model, that 10 years ago, that model does not exist. There aren't blockbusters. There aren't video stores. Everything is online, and that's the Wild West. I can't go to Netflix and say, would you put Hunting in Wartime on? Because you need to be represented. And I don't have the money to be represented. And I don't have the connections to be represented in that way. So, and it is the Wild West in terms of internet. Like, it's not like a set thing. Like, people are on Vimeo charging or YouTube charging. There's all these different ways to do it, and I'm still navigating that. I mean, ultimately, I would love to see this on PBS, some sort of public broadcasting. I don't want to see it ripped apart with commercials on cable networks. I would love to see it somewhere, either on PBS or in universities, somewhere where people can actually see it in its entirety and really take it in. So, you know, knowing that and having a meeting yesterday here at KTOO and knowing that I need about $10,000, I'm just going to have to fundraise again. It's just, you know, be realistic, it's daunting. Like, I just spent 40 days raising $6,000 to come up here. So I basically cashed out on all my friends and family. So anybody out there that's independently wealthy has a few extra, you know, $10,000 to throw my way, please do. But no, I never give up. I love this job. It's the best thing in the world. If I could do this all the time, I would. Unfortunately, I have to work day jobs here and there, but it's great. And I don't go into it. I'm totally a nervous person, like walking into the premieres and are they going to like it and things like that. But in terms of making a film and seeing it through, I know I can do that. It's just getting it out there that is the trickier part now.
So last night what I saw in the film was the veterans, some of them, and to a large extent most of them, had progressed in a healing way on their own. And as an artist, you've added a huge, fully encompassing layer that is new to them. You know, and you did that without the entire film, without interjecting any of your own feelings and opinions about it. Was that part of your intention from the beginning, to let them be the entire voice of the film?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I already had my opinions about war. I wanted it to be their story. And Tlingit history is passed on verbally. And I knew that, and I wanted it to be just in their words. You know, I wanted to make sure there was zero narration. I'm not a big fan of narration anyway. But, you know, some of my friends, when I would show them rough cuts, they're like, well, maybe you should have a narration here. I'm like, no, this has to be in their words. So that from the get-go, I knew. And you know, like I said, I have my own political views on things, but I really didn't want to interject that into the film. I wanted them to tell their story and it just to come out and have people think. And I think I've totally accomplished that because I've shown it to, you know, very liberal people and very conservative people and people in the middle, and everybody can find something about the film that speaks to them, which I'm very proud of. You know, I want this film to be taken in, and I want their stories to be listened to and absorbed, I guess is the word.
You know, and last night, the reaction that I saw after the first screening, there was some pretty powerful feedback. There was some pretty powerful thanks to you. I mean, I saw tears about running from your eyes. And I imagine in Hoonah it was more powerful.
You know, yeah, it was more powerful just because, well, I don't want to say more powerful. They were both equally powerful, I think, in different ways. This was really powerful because it was people I did not know. I wasn't connected to. I mean, they're connected to Hoonah and stuff, but I don't know them personally. So that was very powerful. And I think in Hoonah it was really powerful because, you know, you want the veterans to like the movie. I mean, I want the veterans to like the movie. So having them come up and say really good things and giving me hugs and crying up on stage with me, it was, I can't even talk about it now. It was devastating. It was wonderful, but it was very moving. Very, very moving. So yeah, I mean, I'm in seventh heaven. This has been great. Like you know, your worst fear is that they're not going to, they're going to do something wrong, or it's not, you know, it'll offend someone, but overwhelmingly people really love it and want to take it in. And getting thanked is just like, I feel, you know, it's crazy. Like the veterans, their story, like, thank you for thanking me, but it's, you know, thank them because they're brave enough to open up about these really, really hard things. So it's amazing. And I'm so glad I was part of it to help them do that. But, you know, any amount of healing is worth this film. So.
So from here, you go up to Homer in Anchorage?
Yeah, I'll be at the Homer Theater on the 16th, and that's at 6 p.m., and then it'll be in Anchorage on the 19th, Sunday the 19th, at 7 p.m. at the Alaska Native Heritage Center.
So from two things. One, you'll be farther from the source.
Yes.
And farther from people, probably up there without people who are aware. You may run into other Alaska Natives that may relate, and other Vietnam veterans that may relate to the story, but it'll still be different. I mean, do you have, you know, does this set you up for, you know, a little bit of a disappointment to, when you get up there?
Oh.
Or, I mean, are you looking at the film more as, at this stage, from the same perspective as you want to get it out on a national stage, recognizing that it can't just be for local audiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, nothing is going to beat Huna and Juno, I don't think, in terms of the emotion. I mean, the, you know, everybody's connected to somebody in that film. So that, I mean, that's like crazy. But no, I mean, I want everyone to see this for different reasons. I think Native American communities, Alaskan Native communities, and veterans communities are going to, I don't want to say benefit from it most, but they're going to relate most, and I think they're really going to get something out of it. In terms of the general public, I think I want everyone to know this story. This is a great story, and it's an American historical story that should be told, and, you know, isn't. Like we said, elitists tell us what our history is, and this is what the reality of our history is actually. So, yeah, I want this to be seen everywhere, and I think anyone can relate to it with that knows a veteran. Or that just has like a heart, you know, it's a wonderful story. And I think it's going to get out there. And I am actually looking forward to this. I think it's going to be maybe less emotional taxing for me to go to maybe Elmer and Anchorage, but maybe not. Like if this could be very moving for people up there too. So we'll see.
In a sense, Ken Burns did that great documentary on World War II veterans several years back, you know, and there's going to become a period where Vietnam veterans are approaching that same stage of life where there's not many of them left.
Right.
And capturing these stories and having them before they're gone are important for society to understand the human cost of war.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and as you said earlier, the Iraq War veterans, the Afghanistan War veterans will someday be where today's Vietnam veterans are, even if they served in a war that was supported.
Right. Exactly.
By the American people.
Yeah, personally, I don't think it matters. I think that war is traumatizing and people need help from it. And, you know, two of the main people in my film are very, very ill right now. And, you know, it's sad. But it is history and it needs to be documented, I think.
So have you got any other obscure historical stories that are tugging at your imagination to go on to next?
You know, I'm stuck in the Vietnam era. I was born in 71, and I think I remember like watching TV and watching some of the carnage. It sticks with me, and I think a lot of things happened because of that war that I would want to do a piece on. For instance, no one even knows about Laos. Like, you know, we bomb Laos every 8 minutes for 10 years. It's a tiny country. No one knows that. No one knows how the CIA like took heroin out and funded the war because they didn't fund it legally through Congress. Just stories like that to me are very interesting. And I would always like to bring stories about, you know, that's hidden from the public to light, because I think we have this perception of things and the reality might be different. So anytime I can throw more reality into history, I probably will do it. So
it's a hard sell. You know that.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Not for the money.
Yeah. So anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to thank the Juneau and Huna community, Southeast Alaska community, for really, really supporting me in so many ways, whether it's, you know, discounts at hotels or, you know, free rides, whatever. I mean, and Colette Costa at the Gold Town movie theater. She's like one of the best theater owners I've ever met. She's amazing. So I just want to thank the whole community. One thing I did want to say was, not a plug or anything, but I'm very honored. You know, I used a lot of National Archives footage, and during Veterans Day, the National Archives, I think it's the William J. McGowan Theater in Washington, D.C., is going to show Hunting in Wartime. So,
oh, wow.
I'm really excited about
that. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks. That's it.
Okay, well, and thanks for joining me this morning. I got to say, I thoroughly was moved by the film last night and the reactions, and I'm really glad you brought it down.
Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Peace Talk on KTOO-FM in Juneau. I'm Rich Moniak, and you just heard an interview with Samantha Farinella about her film Hunting in Wartime, a documentary about Vietnam War veterans from Huna. She was in Juneau in July for a screening of the film and participated in a talkback session afterwards that included a live performance of the song you heard earlier on the film trailer. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the song was written and composed by Lyle Kelly James and Colleen Elizabeth James of Juneau. Let's take a short music break and listen to their performance.
Ho, ho, ho. Oh.
That was a live performance of the music from the film Hunting in Wartime. If you're joining us late, Samantha screened the film last month in Hoonah, Juneau, Homer, and Anchorage. You can find reviews online at the Juneau Empire, Capital City Weekly, and the Anchorage Press. Fred Bennett is one of the veterans who appeared in Hunting in Wartime. Here's what he had to say to the audience in Hoonah after they watched the film.
You know, in our cultural ways, when we're being taught how to hunt, fish, and gather, because we live from the land, air, and sea, they tell you, when you gather your first bird, your first deer, your first bear, your fish, you always thank it. Thank you for your sacrifice, because that animals make a sacrifice so we can survive. And a man, when you go to war, that's a whole different entire thing. And that was where we had the most problems with. We're not made. It's like Donald C. said, we are not made to kill people. We're not. It goes against every principle that we have ever been taught from our ancestors. And once you do that, you're never the same person again. Not ever. I don't care how much good stuff you have going for you. You're never the same person that you left when you left home. You come back entirely changed. Your lookout is different. You're always looking over your shoulder, your back. You walk in a place to sit down. You make sure that you can see the door and have an avenue of escape to get the hell out. You know, it makes you different. It makes you feel different. It makes you look at things different. You react different to different kind of things. Stimuli. Donald C. talked about stimuli, about what happens when you hear strange certain noises and stuff, and you react to that noise, and people don't understand what that is. I was in San Francisco, walking down the street. It was some kind of celebration going in Chinatown. I was in Chinatown. Kid threw a firecracker. There's a car sitting alongside the curb. I bet there wasn't that much. And I put my ass underneath that. I'm telling you, so scared I got. Crawled underneath the goddamn car. And then I crawled out the other side looking around. Because for about 10, 15 seconds, I was in Vietnam again. Smack in the middle of it. It changes you. 50 years and I'm still like that, everywhere I go. It changes you. It changes you and nobody understands the change that comes over you. Sometimes you don't want to go to sleep, you know, because you know what's going to happen. And I've known guys stay awake days at a time just so that won't happen to them. But eventually it comes to you. And then one of the things that they said in that film, they said that they were afraid of us. A lot of us didn't come home. I didn't come home for a while because I didn't want to subject my family to what was going on. But by doing that, I was subjecting myself also, put myself away from help. Because at the time, I didn't know about the VA. I had no idea about the VA. I don't know about other people that went over there, and I don't know how what their culture was like or how they were raised or anything like that. But our saving grace, I will say for us as veterans, was that we were able to come back to a community that knew us, loved us, had raised us, had taken care of us, had fed us, clothed us, housed us. And I felt that like we were coming home to a safe place. I did.
Victor Bean is another veteran from the film, and he attended the screening with Samantha in Anchorage. Following a few questions that you'll hear him give the audience is an emotional response from Pat Marvin of Angoon.
She wanted to know what it was like when you came back, if you were spit on or were you treated ill, and do you think it's better now for Vietnam veterans than it was, you know, when you first got back home?
When I came back home, I tried to talk with different people about it and couldn't do it. I talked to my dad. He was a World War II combat veteran. And he told me that nobody understands, son. you have to do it by yourself. And I just tried my best.
Yeah. And what do you think today? Do you think it's better today for Vietnam vets? Do you think they're healing?
I think that after 40 years and they finally get a welcome, you know.
Yeah. Did you hear that?
Yeah. After 40 years, he gets a welcome.
I'm Pat Marvin, and I'm from Mangoon, but I'm married to Larry, and I know a lot of people in his family. And this is the first time I've ever heard a veteran talk about what happened in Vietnam. And I've had family over there that wouldn't talk. But I welcome Victor home. And thank you for doing this.
Of course, other Vietnam War veterans attended the screenings. In Juneau, I saw Don Birdseye as he was leaving. I could tell the film really touched him emotionally. Don is the treasurer of VFP in Juneau. He served in Vietnam for a year and a half in a helicopter unit where he worked to familiarize pilots with the aircraft they'd be flying. These were a few of his thoughts after seeing the film. And those will be followed by some remarks from a veteran in Anchorage.
Well, the film was excellent. There's aspects of it all that I'd like to have known more about. So it raises questions in my mind that she may have already answered other people. But I was feeling a kinship from some of the phrases that they used that only people who've been to Vietnam know to use. Xin Loi, Di Di Mao. Little catchphrases like that. Xin Loi is sorry about that. But it's done derogatorily. It's not an expression of true sorrow. Sorry about that, GI, is generally how Xin Loi finishes. I'd like to learn a lot more about the guys that the film depicts, their journey home and what they went through and their ultimate triumphs. They stopped drinking. They stopped drinking because they started talking to each other about what they'd been through. It's a wonderful message. It's something everybody should see.
I work with the Wounded Warriors, and you'll notice one thing in that film that I'm sure you can relate to is that you lose your childhood when you're doing this kind of thing. You go there a kid, and then it's gone, and that's really fast. And a lot of that information that you're talking about is relevant to all wars. It doesn't matter. When you mentioned 4 million Vietnamese fatalities, I went back to Vietnam in 2012. Most of the people there are too young to remember it, and they call it America's War. It's not the Vietnam War. And we have to remember what our tax dollars are doing all over the world. And that's a part of this that I think is imperative, and I appreciate people coming out to see it, because it affects us every day for the rest of your life. And it's kind of hard not to, when you have to hide it for maybe 25 years. I haven't had a drink since 1984, so we drank a lot of years away trying to hide it, and that's what happens to a lot of Iraq-Afghan kids, too. So thank you.
As Samantha mentioned earlier in the show, she wanted this movie to be the veteran's story. She interjected none of her own convictions about war or the inadequate help veterans get when they try to return to a normal civilian life after being at war. I think she did a remarkable job allowing their voices to be heard. Post-traumatic stress disorder was a theme throughout the film, as well as in the talkbacks after the screenings. It's a psychological label that didn't exist until 5 years or more after the Vietnam War ended. But that malady has been around since men began engaging in warfare. Dr. Jonathan Shea is a psychiatrist who served in the VA when PTSD was becoming a new diagnosis for what was once combat fatigue and shell shock. For many years, he's worked with veterans from the Vietnam War. He believes PTSD is a moral injury rather than an illness. And he believes that significant healing can occur when members of a veterans community are encouraged to truly hear these stories. Andrew Himes worked with Shea when he produced the documentary film Voices in Wartime. And he says a poet, songwriter, or filmmaker has a role in this process that Shea calls communalizing. Himes writes that if the artist, quote, is able to retell the story in a form that contains enough of the truth, then the person who did experience it can say, yes, you are listening. You heard at least some of it. And you retold it with a truthfulness and emotion that I can recognize. End quote. I believe this is exactly what Samantha Farinella has done with Hunting in Wartime. It's a tribute to the soldiers and to the truth of the war as they lived it. And most importantly, it's helping heal an entire community who suffered the consequences of their young men going off to war in Vietnam. Now let's listen to the thoughts of a few people from Alaska's Native communities after they watched the film last month.
My husband is Don C. that was in the movie. And I know when we got married back in 81, he drank, he drugged, he did it all. And he had flashbacks to the point of crazy. And I think the families need to be allowed to participate in the fact that the men are now getting well, but the families aren't, because there's nothing open to them. I just think, even if it was done orally, that wouldn't bother me at all, but somebody, and I'm getting too old for it, but somebody needs to take a project and make oral recordings of these families, because the men are dying off, but the wives and the moms and dads are real close too.
I'm related. I'm Norma's older sister, Gloria. The Mills were our cousins. Their mother and our father were sister and brother. I grew up the first 9 years of my life in Hoonah, and we used to play as kids. We built snow forts, snow castles, snow tunnels. They were fun. They protected me. All the Mills boys were a lot of fun. When they came back from Vietnam, they were totally different. Inwardly, quiet, battle-weary, I'm sure. And it was confusing. I mean, these were the guys that I loved, that I lived with as a child, and they were strangers. This movie explains so much. Thank you so much for the whole thing. I would love to see it on PBS if you ever got that chance.
I just want to let you know that I'm thankful for you for putting the fishing features in there, and a lot of the pictures of the elders like Frank C. and, you know, the ones that remember who were there when they ended up coming back home. But like you say, what was important for me to add was that, you know, no matter what those guys went through, you can't take away the culture, no matter what you do, no matter how many times you slap their hand or punish them and everything. But that is the foundation that we grew up on. And, you know, the resiliency was there. And Victor, you know, for all that you did, Diane, I like what he said. I found someone to listen to me. And so I just wanted to thank you for having those pieces in there, because they're very important.
I'm from Hoonah. Glakauish Kyle Wark Yuchatuasak. My name is Glakauish Kyle Wark. Achsani Owe. Those are my uncles that you are interviewing. Tony Mills and Kenny Austin in particular. I knew that they went to war, and I heard that growing up, that they were in Vietnam, or Tony at least. But I didn't know anything about it, and they never talked about it. I never heard from them what they went through. And it really opened my eyes to what their life was like and the transitions that they saw. And I think you did a really good job of letting them speak and showing us what they were saying, and really putting us there. I really enjoyed your film, but it made me cry almost continuously. Real hot tears that stung my cheeks when they went down. So gunstchish, atlein gunstchish. Thank you very much for putting this film together, for preserving this history, and for opening our eyes to our neighbors and to the people that we live with and our relatives. Gunstchish, Victor. Gunstchish.
And last of all, we'll be hearing from Lyle James, who spoke after the first screening in Juneau. Besides the appreciation he eloquently expresses, he made a pitch to raise funds so Samantha can pursue converting Hunting in Wartime to the format needed to be broadcast on PBS. That's a huge step in getting not just the stories of these veterans out to the country, but to show the country how we as a society need to work harder to genuinely listen to the stories of all veterans without judgment and without appropriating them for purposes beyond their healing. And I want to share with you that the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace has voted to contribute $1,000 to this effort. Now let's listen to Lyle.
Ach, Sani has, Achat has, Ach Kirchko has, Ah, Achen Gunnestisch, I wanted to say to all the veterans, thank you for making it home safely. Because of you, I'm able to learn the language that my grandparents spoke. And what I wanted to do is, if everybody can, we'll start donating to help bring this, our uncles' voices, to the forefront so that their stories can continue being heard beyond today, throughout everywhere, because it's because of them that I'm honored to be able to stand here this evening and say thank you. Achen Gunnestisch, for taking the time, for being open to share history that isn't easy to share, for being open to documenting their stories. We have many relatives throughout Southeast who have similar history, and that their voices should be heard as well. So I wanted to say, Achen Gunnestisch, thank you very much. Yeah.
That's our show for tonight. I'd like to thank Samantha Farinella for the film she created, for coming back to Alaska to participating in the screenings in Hoonah, Juneau, Homer, and Anchorage, for sharing the audience feedback with us, and for taking an hour out of her full schedule to sit down and talk with me. And I'd like to thank the veterans from Hoonah who helped make this all possible. It's their stories, and it took a lot of courage to share them with the world. And thanks to Lyle and Colleen James for their music, and to KTOO for the airwaves, and to all you listeners who joined us tonight. If you missed this broadcast or would like to share it with someone you know, you can find it on the web at ktoo.org. Go to the Programs drop-down menu and look for Focus on Community. Usually I close the show with the end of the End of War song by Eric Colville, but tonight we'll go out with the song that honors the Hoonah veterans in Hunting in Wartime. Gunnestisch, and good night.
Ho, ho, ho. Oh,
You're listening to KTOO FM in Juneau.